going to borrow a question from Gordon White. Gordon White's famous first question. Were you a weird kid?
Yes. I was like the class clown. So I was a bit of a loud kid when I was growing up, and I had to learn the hard way that, you know, you shouldn't always be the one that's talking loudly in class and messing around. So I was interested. I was saying this the other day on my recent talk with another content creator, the Under Couch Show, who's he's really cool. And I did a long 3-hour, what we called a fireside chat, which was just kind of like a relaxed discussion that went on. And I was talking about this because, you know, I didn't have any sort of like high strangeness when I was a child or anything like that. And when I was, you know, in school, if I was in the library, I'd probably pick up a book if there was something about UFOs or mysteries and that stuff interested me. The one thing that really interested me, although it's not really connected to UFOs necessarily, is I was like really into Egyptology and ancient Egypt when I was younger, like literally from like an age of like 5 or 6. It just kind of like, I love Egypt and I don't even know where it came from. So I got really obsessed with like ancient Egypt when I was young, but that's it. I didn't really get really deep into anything until I would say about 19 years old, and I'm 25 now, going on 26 in January.
And what happened at 19 that kind of sparked you in this direction?
Well, I mean, I've gone over this before and I don't mind talking about it, so don't worry about asking the question because I'll be candid. I had a major depression, and I know that like at 19 it's like, okay, yeah, you had a depression, but I was at university at that age, and basically a lot of different things were going on, and I was stressed about what I was gonna do in my life, just like anyone at that age. And I didn't have any sort of grounding in a spiritual belief or anything like that. So I guess I was just still kind of trying to find my way through life, and a lot of things were happening at the same time. So I became very depressed, and I had a bit of this like kind of like this depression moment in my life. And funnily enough, it was a series of books which brought me out of this depression. And it's a series of books called Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. And I've read these, and you know, for some people, I understand like the word God's a buzzword, and I'm not a religious person or anything like that. And I wasn't before I read these books. And it was my dad that recommended that I read these books. And I didn't want to read them for a while. And, you know, I ended up picking them up. And after I read them, it was the first thing that introduced the idea of like universal consciousness and it actually dived quite a lot into metaphysics, which is what got me interested in looking into like quantum mechanics and quantum, which, you know, totally layman in that regard. Like, I don't know really anything, but just like an intuitive sense of piecing things together. So at the age of 19, I kind of got brought out of a depression through these books that sparked an interest in looking into deeper things and questions. And so my initial grounding before I got into the UFO subject was this kind of mix of science that delved into non-locality and the capacity of consciousness to go beyond the body, and also more kind of like holistic approaches from things like the Conversations with God book about like a universal mind, universal consciousness. So these two things kind of married together for me. And then my best friend, coincidentally enough, after like about maybe 2 years of looking into these types of things, I actually fell into what I would probably describe as another depression, because I'd actually got to a point where I felt, okay, I feel I know these things. Like this really resonated with me, and a lot of this information brought me to a good place, but now I don't know what to do with it. Now I'm just kind of like, okay, now I feel like I could actually possibly be a non-physical entity being human for a moment, but what do I do with this information? And I just felt quite down, but it made me actually feel quite negative about life. Like I got into this kind of point where I was like, well, life is just like an illusion. It's all just like a projection, and really nothing matters. And it got me really down. And then I actually, and you know, for your more scientifically inclined listeners, they'll probably be like, oh, but this is the truth. This is what happened. It's my own subjective experience. And I'm not going to try and preach it out as if, you know, this is the way, but this is just what happened to me. Is I remember quite clearly in this very room, I was sitting on my bed and I just kind of spoke out to the universe, or, you know, not like a prayer, but just my own way of talking out to if anything was there. And I was just like, I don't know what to do. I don't, you know, I honestly don't know what to do with all this information that I've learned and where to go with it. And I just don't know what to do. And I need something to do in this life, in this real world while I'm in it, that is represent of this stuff that I've learned, that, you know, is doing something with this information. And literally like 2 weeks later, my best friend showed me the documentary Unacknowledged by Dr. Stephen Greer. And that was my first introduction into anything really UFO heavy. I hadn't really watched many documentaries before that. And so that was kind of like, okay, there's some really good military testimony in this. And I was, you know, nodding along like, wow, this seems like there's actually some really legit stuff to the UFO subject. Obviously, I, like, total amateur, I had no idea about, you know, the treasure trove of information at this point. But then it got at the end to the part about contact via consciousness modalities. And this, for me, just because of what had been happening previously, I was just like, what? Like, okay, I'm listening, I'm paying attention to this. And so I started doing more research and I found out that there were different groups and that this was actually something that was happening, that people were trying to initiate contact and they were using night vision goggles to film it. And I found, you know, things that seemed to be quite real. So I went out into my garden and I started trying.
Oh, you froze, Jay. I'm sure you'll be right back.
Orbs of light that would fly over the sky and start flashing, you know, like sequentially over the sky, not like a iridium flare or anything like that. And so it really, that triggered me. And that was kind of the precursor to me making Project Unity, was I started having my own experiences, which I couldn't explain, including ones with these orange orbs, which I've gone over a few times. I'm happy to talk about again, if you want to talk about them. Those were really like catalysts for me wanting to do this, because it was just so far beyond. I'd seen white orbs in the sky that, you know, some people could dismiss as satellites, but it just did, they seemed so odd to me. But then when the orange orbs turned up, that was just, you know, at that point, there was no going back to a belief that these things couldn't possibly be real. So yeah, these events, like a lot of a personal journey. This is why I want to explain it, because there's so much of what's happened to me is so subjective and personal. It only makes sense for me to explain it because, you know, for me, these are the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing. And yeah, so that, you know, that's the long story, really. Like, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
I really appreciate you being so open and honest about that. Maybe for listeners, if you wouldn't mind just going through that fascinating CE5 experience that you had, you've kind of mentioned it as being kind of like the biggest mind blower for you, that involved that kind of sentient cloud and what came out of it. Would you mind going into that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let me just move my leg because it's gone dead and I've got pins and needles in my leg. It's gone to sleep. Yeah. So that was, that happened on, it was either the 24th or the 25th of August, 2019. And I think there was a fair few months before that, but I was having these white orbs coming over the sky. You know, the frequency of these orbs as well was what kind of caught my eye, because I've seen satellites coming over, but when you've got like 20 to 30 of these white orbs coming over within the window of about 25 minutes and a lot of them are glowing and flashing, you're kind of like, right, okay, something's going on here. And you'd also get flash bulbs in the sky where you just get like a dark area of sky, which would just flash and it would stay in that same area. So that's actually what happened this night. Is I was outside and I was looking up. I was literally outside in this garden. I was looking up at the stars and I was you know, getting into a calm state of mind and just being very clear with my thoughts about, you know, essentially projecting in my mind my thoughts out and being very clear and coherent with them, modeling them on the intention of making some form of contact with something that understands and is picking up these thoughts, as crazy as it sounds. And I would not be saying this a few years ago. My goodness, if you went back in time and told me I'd be talking about this, I would have gone, you're crazy, but here I am. But so yeah, basically the first thing that happened was there was a flash of light in the sky, in the right hand side of my sky. I was at the back of my back of this garden looking at my house, and in the right hand side this flash of light came. So I looked up and it just kept happening. It was a flash every like second and a half, flash, 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 just up in the night sky. And it wasn't moving. And it happened for about maybe 3 or 4 minutes. And then it actually started moving. So the flash would happen. And then the next time it'd be slightly lower down and then slightly lower down. And it kept going like that. And then it finally stopped. And I've said this so many times, but from just my perspective, it actually stopped in alignment with two other stars and it made like a triangle shape and it kind of could just continue to flash. And so I was staring at that and, you know, pretty amazed because I hadn't actually seen anything doing that before. Like I'd seen flashes in the sky, but I hadn't just seen this specific behavior of such a long-standing repeated flash. And I was watching that for about, yeah, maybe 4 or 5 minutes. And then my attention turned to the left-hand side of my sky. And this is, it's a clear night. It's a crystal clear night. And there was a cloud. And I said this before, like I took a look up and then I kind of just looked away. I looked back up again. And basically this cloud, and I still can't find a good way to describe it other than it was like highly charged, or it was like a dark cloud that was, it was highly charged. The part that was like almost like there was particles that were really aggravated, and it was like fizzling and kind of fuzzy and strange, like staticky and fuzzy. And I'd obviously, you know, never seen a cloud like that before. And so I, the moment I took that second look, I was just like transfixed on this cloud, and it was drifting across the sky absolutely normally, like just kind of drifting across the sky like this. But the appearance of it was just completely absurd. I'd never seen anything like it. So I was watching that, and literally as this cloud got in alignment with my house, if this is my house here, my fist, and this is the cloud, it literally was going across. As it got in alignment with my house, it just started going this way, which is towards me, like I was at this path. So it did a complete right angle turn from its north, from where it was traversing the sky, and it just went like that and just started coming towards me, not down towards me, but it was coming across the sky in my direction. And when that happened, I mean, my heart was really going, because I mean, even though I prepared myself to make some form of initiation of contact, that was so outside of the envelope of what I'd seen beforehand, you know, just white orbs in the sky that were catching my interest. It scared me a bit. And it did this right angle turn. It came across the sky. As it came literally above my head, I had my head craned up like this and I was looking up at it. It was directly above my head. The cloud just dissipated. It just fizzled out into nothingness. Like within a second and a half, it just went shoo. And within that cloud, inside it, as it fizzled out, there was a triangle formation, a perfect triangle formation of about 25, maybe 30 orange orbs of light. And it moved across the sky in a triangle formation behind me, turned around as I was watching it. I could notice that some of them were actually weaving in between each other, like some of the ones in the middle. So I don't know if it was a solid craft, but the lights were moving in between each other. And that was the first time I'd ever seen, you know, orange orbs, and they arrived in a fashion that, I mean, I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. And, you know, weirdly enough, and I don't necessarily want to bring this up too much when I talk about it, because I don't know for 100%, but the next day I woke up and I was in the shower, and, you know, I was drying myself when I came out of the shower, and I looked down at my forearm as I was drying it, and there was three very clear red dots in a triangle formation on my arm. And I didn't know anything about scoop marks at the time, what's called scoop marks, but I looked it up and they looked just the same. I have got an image of it, and I can, you know, send it in whatever fashion if someone wants to see the image. It is still on my arm. It's quite faded now, but I can still see these three circular dots on my arm. And it looks like, and it looked like this from the beginning, it looks like the skin was lifted up and it's scarred over. And the day it happened, which was the day after this sighting, there was no scab, there was no itching, no bump, bruise, cut, no discomfort, nothing. Very clear circles that looked like skin had been lifted up. And I promise I'm not over-exaggerating. I know people tell really fantastical stories, but this is true. And I don't know if it's connected. I don't know. But it just seems really absurd. And it's still on my arm. It's faded now, but it's still there. I can still see them. And it's over a year later now. So, you know, to have that come up the day after a absolutely absurd sighting, and to have it come up with no symptoms and no physical issues whatsoever, and to last so long, it just seems really, you know, like it correlates. But yeah, that was the first time I'd seen them. I have actually seen them on three other occasions, which is phenomenal. And it actually all happened within quite a short window, within maybe a month or just over a month. I saw these orange orbs, haven't seen them since, but that was the first time. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's great. And to have those marks still, it's amazing. I mean, we have a lot of experiencers and Richard Dolan members. And so, you know, we take that stuff quite seriously around here, obviously. I think, did you have any kind of, do you remember any kind of missing time experience? Or did you have, was there anything else from that night going into that next morning that that seemed odd or out of place?
Well, you know, people always ask that, but I honestly don't know, because I mean, it happened around, I'd say maybe roughly 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night. And when it happened, the first person I phoned was my mom. I called my mom up and told her about it. And she could tell, because she's not a UFO researcher or anything like that. She's actually now, she watches my channel, bless her. She's started to get into it. She started to realize that there's legitimacy from it because of the fact that we've got such great talking points, like the US, you know, all of the stuff that's coming out of the intelligence bureaucracy. So, sorry, what was the original question? Because I went off on a tangent then.
Oh, just if there was anything else from that.
Yeah, missing time. No, I don't know, because I phoned my mom and told her about it, and I think I tried to phone my friends, and then I went to bed, and then I woke up with this with this mark on my arm. So I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know if the mark was on my arm. If I had looked down the moment that sighting had occurred and finished, if I'd looked down, would I have had that mark then, or did it happen when I was sleeping, or you know, I don't know. But yeah, I guess there could be missing time, but if I'm being honest with you, I just really don't know if there was.
Yeah, the sentience behind those types of orbs is just breathtaking. I mean, I know that Bob is pretty public about having seen similar orbs over at Chris Bledsoe's property. That sounds quite similar, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd love to tell you the closest one if I could, because I think that was really quite profound. I mean, that's all of them have stayed with me, but that one's really stayed with me.
Please.
And thank you. Yeah, basically, again, same scenario outside in my back garden, looking up within, I think this was within about half a month of the first sighting of the triangle. And and they've always come from the left hand side. Every time they come from the left hand side, which I don't know if that's a weird pattern, but every time they have. So I don't know if there's anything to make from that. But yeah, this time I was looking up, and what I saw was, I thought I saw three meteorites come by. I saw like these three orange things kind of flying across the sky in my peripheral vision. And I thought they were meteorites. I looked up, and the moment I looked up, I realized they weren't meteorites. These things flew across and they stopped on a dime. They literally stopped on a dime above my house. They were really high up. It looked like they were in space. I'm not sure. They could have been in the atmosphere, but they were very high up. It flew by and they stopped and they started coming down, and I was standing literally on the path looking up at my house, and these things, as they were coming down, they were bobbing again, almost like they were in the craft when they were in the triangle shape. They were weaving between each other, some of them, and these three orange orbs came down kind of bobbing and weaving, like gently, almost like they were bouncing around and kind of playing, and it looked almost playful. And they were roughly like the size, when they came down close enough for me to see, they were roughly the size of like a soccer ball, maybe slightly larger. And they were pastel orange, like a light orange, slightly translucent. They almost looked like, for the photographers here, a camera effect called bokeh or bokeh, which is where you kind of focus a camera out and lights just turn into like 2D balls, like 2D circles. And they just looked, they didn't even look 3D. They looked almost two dimensional, and they came down and they were slightly translucent. They literally hovered above my house. They stopped and just stayed above my house. And my jaw was just completely on the floor at this point. I know people would be like, why didn't you film? But you don't think of filming. You really don't. You're so transfixed. It sucks, because afterwards you're like, oh my God, my iPhone was in my pocket. Like, it was there. But you can't, your brain stops working. And you know, I had started this with the intention of some form of peaceful contact. You know, look at this monkey, because I'm just like, mouth open. I'm not being diplomatic or peaceful or anything. I'm just staring in wonderment. But they came down and they hovered above my house, and they just stopped there frozen on a dime, like completely still. They were bobbing and weaving, and then they just came down and went zhoop. And I was staring at them for maybe, I mean, time might have slowed down here. I don't know if that was just my perception. You know, it just felt like a long time, but I was staring at them for maybe about 5 or 6 seconds, really. And then they suddenly started bobbing and weaving, and they went over to my neighbor's house. They literally floated down and were floating above my neighbor's, like his hedge, his trees. And I could see it from, I turned around and I could just see them, and I was staring at them, and they were bobbing and weaving as they floated over. They were doing this kind of like strange little dance, and they were doing all of this bouncing. And then they stopped on a dime again, just froze completely still. And I was again staring at them. And I think at this point I'd gathered enough mental cognition to just say, thank you so much for being here in my mind. Like, I was just like, thank you in my mind. And then they just floated up and up and up and up until I couldn't see them anymore. They just started floating away, and they were doing this bobbing thing, and they were bouncing up and down. And I just watched them, and I was kind of, I think in my mind, I was like going, come back, you know, because I was starting to gain my senses again. And it was, I was getting accustomed to what was happening. But the moment I was getting accustomed to what was happening, they floated away. But yeah, that was the closest. And like, you know, the thing that really got me, not at the time, but afterwards, when I was thinking about it, was when they paused above my roof. They were literally that high above my roof, right? They were balls of light, but there was absolutely no dissipation of light onto the roof whatsoever. There was no glow. They weren't glowing. It was a self-contained light, almost as if, you know, the photons were contained within it. It wasn't spilling out. So that's a completely novel type of light that's physics that were being, you know, shown here. And that only came to me later, and, you know, after some research and some afterthought. But I just thought that was an interesting thing, that it was a completely different type of light.
Yeah, I find that absolutely incredible. And that's that actually comes up in Richard's new book, which came out today.
Brilliant.
It was just announced about 45 minutes ago.
Oh, nice. What's it called? Because I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's called The Alien Agendas, A Speculative Analysis of Those Visiting Earth. And it has some wonderful illustrations from the great Sherry Miller, who's joining us and drinking a beer in the bottom right-hand corner, or at least mine. I was wondering, yeah, along the lines of that C5 experience, I mean, it's amazing. You see this often online where people, you know, on Twitter or wherever the heck that the peanut gallery lives, that there's often that situation of people saying, well, if that really happened, you wouldn't react like that. You know what I mean? Like, as if people can predict other people, as if when something bizarre happens, it seems out of the ordinary that somebody would respond in a bizarre way to a bizarre circumstance, right?
I mean, you know, I was having my mind, but my whole reality was being changed while that thing was coming down. And, you know, every time as well, because the other times that they came by was very fleeting, from the left-hand side in two different types of formations, like one which was like a load of connected Vs, like a series of Vs, and they just flew across the sky, like within like 3 seconds, it was gone. And then the next time they came, it was like a V shape, always like Vs and triangles to them. I don't know if there's some relevance to that. But I think it was the last time that it was like a V with like some trailing off of the back. And these were the last two. And I find obviously like the cloud with the triangle coming out of it and the three coming down as the most prevalent. But either way, these are all fascinating. But you know, those are all the times they've happened, but they're so fleeting, or they're so mind blowing that you can't really gather yourself sensibly. And I wish I could. And I hope that if anything happens in the future, I'll be more prepared, because I would love to get something on film. And I have actually seen some pretty compelling video footage of orange orbs and things that I think look exactly like what I saw. So, you know, I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there that feel my pain when it comes to not being able to get the video footage.
100%. And I think that maybe about half the people that are attending today, not to call anybody out, or might be in that position. Along with that, do you feel like, okay, first of all, in the chat, people are asking quite a bit, please feel free to be as vague as you'd like, but where generally are we talking about that these occurrences have happened?
Oh, Nottingham City.
Okay.
I live in it. But you know, what's funny actually, is when I told my mom about the orange orbs, she actually did some research, because I was really quite emotional on the phone. So she was like, oh my God, like, you know, and she actually did some research, and I'll try and find the newspaper, because I'm not making this up. I'll find it and I'll send it to whoever wants to see this. She found a newspaper, and I don't mind giving this away because it's not going to give my house number away, but my road comes up, because in this newspaper, in the local town, on my road, there is a sighting of orange orbs that was given, and it says literally like Nottingham, my road, my town. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Literally on my road, someone had the same sighting like maybe 10 years ago or something. I was like, no way.
That is absolutely incredible. It's right? Amazing. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Forgive my ignorance, but do you get crop circles anywhere near that part of the country?
You know, I'm not 100% sure, because I mean, England's really known for crop circles, and you get them around places like near the Stonehenge and on Oxford yes. area and all sorts of areas. But I know that Nottingham is kind of known for some weirdness, and whatever you believe in, you know, I don't know where I sit on this, but we sit on a ley line, like, you know, there's quite a few different ancient sites around us. And but I don't know if there's any specific history with crop circles, although we have got a claim to fame, although I'm not personally from here, I just moved here, but Nottingham's got a claim to fame, which is that they invented, literally right down the road from where I am, is the Rolls-Royce Aerospace Center. It's the only Rolls-Royce Aerospace Center in the country. And they invented the first vertical takeoff and landing VTOL aircraft here called the Flying Bedstead, which, you know, was a vertical takeoff craft. So that was a kind of cool little bit of history that I picked up here. And there's weird stuff around this area.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. I mean, just from the case studies that I've done, I mean, it's very obvious. And I'm sure a lot of us recognize like how many of these happen near aerospace facilities.
Right, right,
you know?
Right.
And I mean, whether that's like, you know, surveillance on the part of, you know, ETs, ultra-terrestrials, whoever the heck is behind.
Well, this Rolls-Royce Aerospace facility is the only Rolls-Royce facility, if I'm aware, that's cleared to have nuclear materials. Not necessarily ICBMs or anything, but nuclear materials are allowed there. So, that, you know, there could be a red flag.
Oh, absolutely. Along with your CE5 experience, I was wondering, Do you feel like you've gotten any negative reactions from disbelieving people like since you've come out publicly about that? And if so, do you have any reflections on that or how you've processed that?
I think, because I've definitely changed my approach, I think, in a good way, I'd like to think. Because, you know, I came into this, I guess, a little naive, and I had these experiences and try to tell as many people as possible. And, you know, there were quite a few people like, this is just bull, you know, woo woo BS. And, you know, this is nothing. And I was just like, well, there's got to be a way of explaining this. So I've tried my best, and I'm still trying. Obviously I'm a young guy and I'm still learning. Like, I'm trying my best to just find good ways to articulate this in an intelligent way, in a sensible way. You know, I've tried to learn as much as I can grasp it, you know, think like the concept of non-locality and quantum entanglement and superposition and things that lean towards the idea that there could actually be some sort of, you know, non-local information exchanges taking place between human beings and probably every sentient thing in the universe. But, you know, it's, yeah, like with people that are, I've got better with it. I mean, you have to have a thick skin in this, man. You know, you've got to have a thick skin in the UFO community, because people will take bites at you for all sorts of stuff. You know, and you know, it bothers me sometimes. I'm human, of course it bothers me, but I'm lucky with my channel. I feel like I've cultivated a good audience of people that are very sensible, and we all have good conversations. Everyone's polite. You know, I don't really get many trolls and negative comments, which is really awesome. But I think you need constructive criticism, because I've had to, you know, switch up some of my approaches just because I've come off quite strong, because obviously I've got, like I said, a subjective belief, and I do genuinely have a belief that I feel has some evidence behind it, but it is still really like almost like a working theory, you know, more than a straight up fact. And, you know, my ideas around consciousness. So you have to be careful and model your responses appropriately. So I've tried my best, and I hope that I'm coming across sensible, you know, because these things really did happen to me, and they've caused problems. They've caused, you know, issues with family members, close family members who haven't wanted to acknowledge this, and it's, you know, it's sad, and it sucks for me, because I just, you know, it's real, and it's like, you know, something so crazy happens to you, and you do want to tell people, you want to share it, you do, because it's like, you know, I need to talk about this, I need to find a way to understand this. And so, you know, I have had my issues with people who have been negative, but at the end of the day, I feel good about what I'm doing. And so far, I seem to be on the right track. And, you know, I've had people who I respect profoundly, like Bob and Richard and Grant Cameron and all sorts of people I never expected I'd be talking to. You know, I started this as a listener, listening to these people, and then somehow stumbled into being connected to them in different ways and talking. And I just find it to be a profound honor, like, you know, because it just means I can actually try and talk about this with people that want to know and have some sensibility about the issue.
I really, really appreciate that. Along those lines, this might be a good portion to bring this up. Let's see if I can do a screen share here. I asked Richard if he would mind giving us a question for you for this.
I've got a question for Richard as well.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, we can do a little round robin here. Oh, fantastic. Okay, I'll just read it out loud. Okay. As for discussion topics, I have given this some thought. I never want to hijack the discussion of these important Zoom meetings. However, I do wonder about any technology that folks encounter during their experiences. That is, the types of instruments or other tech that people notice or experience during encounters. I think of a question like this as a kind of counterintelligence that we can do in order to get a sense of what these beings possess. So, qualities of the craft that people have noticed, types of equipment, capabilities of same, or any other observations that Jay has or has collected. What do you think about that? Best, Richard.
Can you repack that a little bit? That
last sure. I think what Richard's really asking here is of cases that you've heard about recently or that you've experienced yourself, are there any novel forms of technology that you're particularly interested in? I mean, it sounds like the orbs and the sentience of the orbs would be one, and as well as the obviously you have like there's such a curiosity about the consciousness, and I guess you might have something.
Yeah, I would say like what I touched on before, the weird novel light physics that was going on with the orbs was fascinating. So I think there's something going on there that's very interesting in regards to the manipulation of light. And, you know, perhaps even conscious projections, taking something from my mind and making me see it. You know, I don't know if that was perhaps what was happening. But yeah, consciousness, I think, and the technological symbiosis that seems to maybe be taking place in terms of like using technology as an asset to enhance consciousness abilities. That seems, I'm not like Richard, I don't have a memory of all the cases, forgive me, please, because I can't remember them all. So like, you know, I can only just cite an idea that was actually, this was talked about on Richard Dolan's own channel, but I just can't remember the story. So you guys might be able to remind me, but there was a landing that took place where there was a being that had like a box that it refused to let go of. And it was very, very, yeah. Okay. So, and it refused to let go of that. And people speculated that it might be some sort of consciousness assisting technology. And there are other cases where they're wearing headgear and things like that. And I just think that what we're leaning towards now with things like Neuralink, the AI Neuralink thing that Elon Musk is doing, you know, we're looking at trying to merge AI computer learning with the human mind and these kind of like, you know, these symbioses of consciousness and technology. And that seems to be what they are. And I was actually discussing this with the Undead Gaucho on our fireside chat. And I was just saying, imagine if, and this is just, you know, a hypothesis with no evidence to it whatsoever. It's just a thought. But, you know, if they are using consciousness and technology as some sort of integrated system, it almost seems like perhaps they might have dropped technological breadcrumbs and are pushing us towards the same end goal of like a merging with machine and AI. And, it, you know, because there seems to be a suggestion that they're using that type of technology that is, it's physical, but it affects perception, it affects consciousness. And, you know, I think that's really important. I think obviously, I mean, you know, we should acknowledge the fact that perception is what we see. It's what we know and do in our lives and what we recognize as normal. So if normal can be changed, if they can shift and manipulate what normal is, then, I mean, that would be a profound reason for secrecy, wouldn't it? You know, if they can manipulate the very fabric of our understanding, then how do you address that? But Yeah, I think in terms of technologies and their implications or anything in particular, I think, yeah, the technologies that seem to be integral with consciousness, and also just the variety of craft interests me, because I wonder if, you know, these are different species or if they're just different platforms for different reasons. You know, like we've got B2s and F-18s and all sorts of different things. Maybe they're playing different roles. But it all fascinates me. But the consciousness aspect, the fact that it seems to be woven with the science and the quantum mechanics is what interests me. And I've said this quote before, but it's from Lou Elizondo, and it was given to us by Jim Semivan at a book signing of God's, I think it was God's or Man or War, one of those books. And he said to the camera crew, you know, I, like my good friend Lou said, I think we'll find the truth to this subject between the nexus of consciousness and quantum mechanics. And so, you know, Lou Elizondo made that statement, and I think that's completely true. It's a symbiosis of metaphysics and physics, or whatever you want to call it. And that interests me profoundly.
I think that's absolutely, I completely resonate with that. And I completely agree with you. It is interesting. You're talking about conversations with God, which is in some ways, it could be easily be viewed as a channeled text. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. I just think it's interesting, you know, that we take it as a given that telepathy is kind of an operating principle in many different advanced species. And it seems like it's almost kind of a given that if you advance far enough as a species that or if you survive long enough, perhaps that telepathy kind of like is an evolution, or possibly that only those that survive that long, you know, it's because of the telepathy. Who knows?
No,
you please go ahead.
I was just going to say, I kind of have this idea that, you know, perhaps it's natural and innate, like the non-local access of consciousness and what that might have in terms of its abilities of remote viewing or communication, whatever it is, even maybe telekinesis, moving objects, but who knows? But that might actually be innate. It might be natural to us, and it depends on how you access it. So, I mean, you look at our society. Our society is a very technocratic, technological society. It seems more likely to me now that we're going to access consciousness in its universal modality through, you know, a technological medium. Whereas if you reverse back to when we were shamans in tribal nature and, you know, drinking psychedelic brews, we were connected with Mother Gaia and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that is maybe a different technology to access this type of consciousness. And so it depends on which way you go. And so it looks like right now we're being more stimulated by a technocratic evolution, which is fine, but I feel like it's integral to keep that empathy, consciousness, the I am-ness of existence at the same level as your technology, which we're not doing. You know, and I hope that changes, but I hope that perhaps through because I just don't think we're going to do it any other way than through technology, just based on our projection. And so, you know, I hope that we do find through technology a key or a thing that we find that really validates oneness, love, peace, prosperity, unity, you know, all of these things that we want to see happen. And because I just don't think that we're going to ever go back to being in tribes and being shamanic. And I hope that in some way that can research through technology in some way, because it just seems like that's the only route we're going.
Yes, that makes absolute perfect sense. Along those lines, Kristen had a question for you. Kristen, would you like to?
Sure. Follow up? Yeah, Jay, thank you. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I've been coming in and out of this meeting. My internet in this area has been bad, but I've been wondering, since I follow you on Twitter and I listen to as much as I can of you online, how can you call yourself Project Unity? What made you come up with that name?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that the other day, because I can't remember the day that I decided to call it Project Unity. But I know that the initial feeling, and it's still one that I believe in, is it's kind of multifaceted. Like I do believe in a, you know, a, an idea of unity in terms of humanity healing and being on a more stable path and you know, being unified, but it translates to, you know, the unification of science and spirituality in regards to physics and metaphysics and just unification, because I think that's what we need. We need, you know, less bifurcation and diversity and more unification. And I felt that obviously because of my steps into this being contact through consciousness, acknowledging the fact that there is a universal modality to consciousness, which is in some ways you can't help yourself but fall into some level of spiritual feeling around that. You know, it's almost inevitable. And there have been plenty of perfectly intelligent, credible scientists that have given us fantastic esoteric spiritual quotes about their beliefs in the universe, because it's almost undeniable once you get to a point of, you know, of realization where there is a physics to this world, but there is an unknowing and a mystery as well. And so for me, it's about trying to unify all of those different concepts.
And, you know, actually, I think that the name also works quite well for the UFO community, because one of the things that the UFO community lacks is unity. So it works quite well for that as well. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. Let's see. Yeah, I completely agree with you regarding unity in the community. Yes, we, you know.
Unity. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully in 2021, we can have quite a bit more of that.
100%.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's amazing, along with what you're saying towards consciousness fields and things like that, that we can accept that telepathy, you know, even the most nuts and bolts conservative person, seemingly many of them anyway, can within ufology can get behind the idea of telepathy being able to be something that happens when some incredibly advanced being is like 8 feet in front of you,
right.
Somehow it's just like a mental block that it could occur if the being is, you know, 30 feet away, yeah. A mile away, you know, 100 miles away, like in another dimension or whatever. I think that's like, it really boggles my mind that like that these kinds of mental blocks happen sometimes.
Yeah.
Let's see. Maybe we can start opening up the floor to some of our wonderful members and the questions.
Don't listen to me yapping on. I'm not that interesting.
Well, but you are our wonderful special guest today, and so I'm sure that a lot of us have some wonderful questions to ask. Let's go with Bob first, and then Justin.
Hey, Bob.
What did your dad say when you interviewed Cain and Blumenthal?
He was really proud of me. Like he sent me a long message just saying he listened to the whole thing, and you know, that he thought that it was a very intelligent and articulate interview. Yeah, and he said, you know, well done. He was proud of me. And my mom, thank you. And my mom and my stepdad were also very proud of me. So I was very lucky in that regard. Like, I think that's the thing, you know, I mean, I know I'm talking about crazy subjects, but I've been fortunate enough to have some kind of like grounding points of sensibility and like kind of credibility. So I can go, well, I know I'm talking about this stuff, but I did get the interview with these guys. Have a listen to this. And, you know, some family members will have a listen and go, oh, okay, well, actually, you know, you're talking very sensibly about all of this. It's one of those, you know, some people respond differently, but yeah, my dad was very supportive. Thanks for that, Bob.
Okay. Justin, did you have something you wanted to ask?
Yeah, you were talking about, you know, like Gaia and mushrooms being like a form of technology. And I know now it's going into with the computer and everything like that. Dr. Julie and Jerry Brown wrote a book called Psychedelic Gospels. And it speaks about like Christ, when he talks about the body, was the body of the mushroom, and the blood was like, you know, the juice of the mushroom. And it was like, I don't know, like you said, religion is a little taboo in certain things, like if it was real, if it was a myth, but it was more of that spiritual connection and way to go inside and outside without, I don't know how to like phrase it, but just like that whole, your consciousness and the power of God's within you. You are God, you are everything. And when you take this mushroom, that it helps you to travel outside of your body. And the same with like DMT, you know, you got Graham Hancock doing a lot of looking into that with supernatural and all that, and all native, like native tribes, aborigines, everybody has a way to eat a plant from the earth and journey somewhere that we don't understand. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I'm a big fan. Thank you for that, Justin. I'm a big fan of Graham Hancock. I love listening to him. I've listened to him on all sorts of different talks, and I echo his his feelings, his thoughts and feelings in regards to you know, shamanic plants and these ancient practices. And the thing is, so many different you know, and like you said, it's a controversial topic getting into religion, and you have to be careful. But you know, so many different you know, artworks and different representations and stories and myths and folklores seem to echo the use of different types of plants and different types of, you know, mushrooms. And so I would agree with you. And I think that, you know, it's quite evident that we've gone very far away in the West, in the more Western cultures, from that type of you know, development. And that has happened through different religions, through different scientific dogmas and stigmas. A whole mix of different things have created that, the war on drugs, and you know, a huge amount of stigma on different types of substances, which are now coming out to be proven to be beneficial. You know, you've got actual institutions and medical institutions that are studying these different substances and realizing that actually they have a lot of different benefits, and some of them they can barely even explain. And so yeah, there's a huge level of benefit to that I think is missed out on in the West. And I think there's going to be, you know, you're starting to see a resurgence of that kind of thing in the West, especially not so much in my country. We're very old school in my country and everything is pretty much illegal. But you know, in America, things are starting to shift. Obviously, you've had the legalization of cannabis, and psilocybin in Colorado, I believe, has been legalized. They're starting to do studies on psilocybin cubensis mushrooms. So, you know, I think that we've just had such a battery for decades, really, of propaganda and fear-mongering around these types of substances. And I'm not speaking for all drugs, and I do understand, of course, that people have had really horrific experiences. And I think it's more about education than it is about trying to put these things in a locked box, because everyone is, you know, different. Everyone wants to have different experiences. And I think that we, as I'm going to borrow from Graham Hancock, you know, as sovereign human beings, we should have the right to change our own states of consciousness. And the, you know, the very fact that the state feels it has the ability to dictate states of consciousness to us is quite suggestive of their overall intentions about us being free people in a free society. So you know, you don't have to agree necessarily with the use of substances, of the use of psychedelics, but I think that there's a fundamental freedom issue here that's being, you know, that's not being addressed properly, but it's starting to have a resurgence, and you're starting to see, you know, more people in the West realizing that there is actually some benefit to these things. Thanks for that, Justin.
Yes. Okay. I think Stuart, would you? Stuart Davis. We've got Stuart Davis of the Wonderful Aliens and Artists podcast. Shameless plug on my part towards him.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you, buddy.
Okay. Jay, I'm just curious, because you made a reference to ancient Egypt, and I had heard this reference from Preston Dennett only one time in an interview about this purported multi-day sighting in ancient Egypt, which according to him, it was documented in the official papers, you know, the week-to-week documentation for the pharaoh at that time. If you've heard about this, supposedly it involved thousands of people, multiple days, and it caused such an uproar that they had to like call in the military to quell the uproar of the population. Now, again, the caveat is that I've only heard this account from Preston Dennett, and it was in one interview. And then I went on a search to try to find the documentation, and I've not been able to up until this point, but I'm just wondering if you have any knowledge of it, or if anyone does for that matter.
Yeah, I wish. I've never heard of that story before, so I hope it's true, and you know, maybe we can find something out. But if that's true, that's amazing. So was that meant to have taken place actually in ancient times with a pharaoh dealing with that situation?
Yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah, yeah. That's crazy.
And then I wrote to Preston about it as well and asked him for further leads and sources, and he strangely, I don't think he was being deceptive at all. He just honestly couldn't point me to the Egyptian documents. he was drawing this from. So I've just been curious since then to find if anyone else has knowledge.
Anyone else out there that knows about that? Speak up.
Yeah, feel free to throw an answer in the chat if you have anything, and we can come back to you too. Let's see. Along with that question, I think we had a question from Alex if he'd like to ask it, and then Marty. Oh, you're on mute, Alex.
There you go. Okay. Hey, Jay. Love your work. It's good to see you here. Are you curious about past lives and maybe one of your past lives had a connection with in ancient Egypt, since you were so passionate when you were young?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I'm really interested in past lives. I think the first time I actually heard about them was when I was in school doing like religious studies in class, and our teacher was a Buddhist, so she loved to bring up things like past lives, and it really interested me. And I, you know, what's always really interested me about past lives is that the recourse of memory that people claim to have of their past lives, it seems to be more common in places that culturally acknowledge the existence of past lives and reincarnation. So if you go to India and places, there are all sorts of stories of people having, you know, past lives. And so I have this feeling that, you know, it's all about your level of understanding. So if your culture is, you know, consciously plugged into the knowledge that you do have many lives and you move on, then it's more likely that if you're born into that cultural fabric that you're going to maintain a memory from your past life. I mean, that seems, you know, if these things happen, then that seems sensible to me. But I don't know if I've had personally a past life in ancient Egypt or anything like that. But, you know, I tell you what, it's got nothing to do with ancient Egypt, but I did have a weird dream where I was, you know, it was very, very vivid. And it was the weirdest dream I've ever had in my life, because I was a soldier in the D-Day landings, and I was on the beach, and it was the most vivid thing in my life. I was going all the way up the beach. I stormed the German bunkers. I was on a Jeep going through a forest. It was all linear. There was no abstractness to it. It was like a road. And I actually ended up in a forest on patrol and got shot in the chest and fell down on the ground, and I was holding my chest and I could feel like the blood, I could feel everything. And my vision faded away. I was staring up at the tree canopy. My vision started fading into a closed tunnel. My breathing started echoing and echoing in my head. And then suddenly it went dark and I felt this huge amount of inertia, and I was getting pulled in complete pitch blackness. I was just getting pulled. And I felt this happening, and then I woke up, and I'd never had anything like that happen in a dream. And it really made me think, oh my God, like, did I just visit another life? It was so real.
I had something similar. I was dreaming. I was on the front of some war. I don't know which war it was. And I got shot, I think maybe in the head or in the chest. And I blanked out completely. So it's like I was pulled out and I woke up.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you feel that, like, that you feel like a pulling, like a real, yeah, like inertial pulling? Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It was weird.
So you never know. You never know. Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Alex.
Yeah, Thank you so much, Jay.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's amazing. And it, you know, it comes up so frequently, both in experiencers that have that, you know, it's there. There's kind of like the quote about, you know, the, like, as I often put it, I'm sure that a million people put it this way beforehand, that they kind of like leave the radio on when they leave, you know? And so it's like the kind of awareness that often experiencers after that kind of ontological shock have, you know? And then, you know, it's amazing, you know, we have two experiencer groups that Kirsten and I co-host for Richard Dolan Members, and it's amazing how many experiencers come to an understanding of some form of reincarnation they're given experiences and things like that. It's amazing the kind of doors that unlock, or that there's a predilection towards those doors unlocking.
Yeah, no, totally. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you then. I was just saying it's like it's almost like a symptom, isn't it? It for most people, it just happens. For me, it really did. You know, obviously, like I said before, I'd had experiences that kind of come from a depression and some self-realization. So there was all this kind of like, you know, realization that I was a bit more than what I thought I was. But it really, it was it was quite abrupt. You know, when I first had those sightings of orange orbs, that was like such a, like my reality just turned over. And from that, I was forced almost. I said this actually again, I'm really plugging this fireside chat I did with the Undead Gaucho. So you guys should check that out. But I was talking again in that about how it just, you know, I could acknowledge the fact that in some way it manipulated me, because whether on, you know, it's a positive manipulation, or at least I see it in that way, because I was forced, in my opinion, to start doing what I'm doing. I can't not do it, because if I just turned away from it and tried to ignore it and went on with a normal life, I wouldn't be happy with myself. I would just not be happy. So I had to do it. So, you know, for me, it was like there was no question about it. It was a sudden change.
Yeah, absolutely. Marty, would you like to go next?
Yeah, Jay, thanks for doing this. It's great to get chatting to you personally about this. But I had sort of one question, but then after what Alex mentioned about the past life thing, it's sort of a twin question. The inertia thing that you both were talking about happened to me last week.
Remember
the dream, I just remember a massive motion, like I was thrust by something and just into awakeness, and then I sort of fell asleep again. So I don't remember, I just remember the movement, actually. You talking about that reminded me. But the past life thing, I had a past life regression done about maybe 12 years ago, and I went through, you know, the regressor talked me through this, walking down a path, seeing a door with a number above it, and that's the year you're walking into. And progressively, the further we got on, the more emotion that I felt with each individual life that I walked through. And finally, the last one, I was a female who died in a car crash in Plymouth in 1979. Very specific. Came to in the crash, was able to see my friend who was not awake beside me, you know, obviously unconscious. I was visibly upset, and I had an audio recording of this whole session, and it's since been lost. But I remember at the time almost adopting the personality of the person who I was describing. I became completely overwhelmed with emotion. The regressor then pulled me out of that and moved the timeline on a little bit further. And I was in hospital in bed with internal bleeding and knew I was going to die. That's how I felt. So, and I knew it was coming from this personality, this girl who, you know, I was visualizing in my mind, but I was switching between the visualization of her and then also becoming that person and feeling internally exactly what she was going through. So it's very intense. I'm a firm believer in the past life theory. However, Jay King also knows I'm into the Seth material, and the spacious present thing always causes conflict with me because there are no past lives, everything exists at once. So I'm still trying to sort that out amongst myself.
Yeah, it's like a paradox, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I think at a certain point our human minds just really, really struggle, man, with like some of these things that seem to be like contradictory but maybe complement each other. But that's an amazing experience you had, like pretty intimidating. Yeah. Experience.
Like, I mean, I had one other experience where I was a 5-year-old girl, and I remember looking down at these amazing red shoes that my parents gave me, and I was so excited about it. You know, it's just, it's very subjective. But the other question I had was about CE5, and this leads back to something Stuart told me about in a previous meetup. Where he did an interview with a girl called Jennifer Sodini, who had a positive CE5 experience that very quickly turned into quite a negative one and quite a terrifying one. Has anything like that happened to you?
That's really interesting you mentioned that, mate, because I haven't, but I've always been wondering if there is any legitimate cases of specifically a CE5 grounded in some form of, like, you know, intention for positive contact to then go into a negative experience, because we have so many different... you know, I get a lot of people saying, well, you shouldn't do CE5 and you shouldn't do that kind of stuff because of abductions, because of cattle mutilations. And I'm like, well, I don't know if that's the same facet of whatever we're dealing with here. So, you know, I acknowledge what you're saying, but at the same time, I feel like I'm interacting with something different. So Can you explain that for me? Because I haven't heard, I've been looking for a case that actually, you know, suggests to me I should be maybe a little cautious. So if you can unpack it.
Yeah, well, Stuart's probably a better person to speak to this because he interviewed Jennifer directly, right, and he was the guy that told me. So, Stuart, yeah, if you want to come in on this.
Yeah, would you mind, Stuart, quickly?
Yeah, sure. I don't remember what episode this is, but if people want to hear Jennifer share it in her words, it is on the Aliens and Artists podcast. It's somewhere in the early, probably first 10 episodes or so. And it's super intense. It definitely, well, just to briefly characterize it, Jennifer had just discovered the CE5 protocol. She had the app, and she and a group of, I believe it was 5 or 6 friends, were on the beach in California. And in a, I believe she would characterize it this way as well, in a kind of cavalier manner, she was toying with using the protocols to call in, and it worked in a matter of minutes. This is a daytime sighting, group of people. These, I believe they were orbs, very much like what you had described, Jay, in your encounters. And they came in, and there was this absolutely fabulous display and a confirmation that these objects or entities were telepathically simultaneously responding to their consciousness, and they have this quite enchanted interaction with these orbs. And then the negative event was that within, I think it was maybe in less than 10 minutes, she definitely shares all these details in the interview, so you can reference that for specifics. But within minutes, a black triangle, massive, massive black triangle showed up, and it was not confusing. Everyone there understood that the black triangle had arrived in order to disperse the previous initial objects or beings, whatever they were, which it did. And then the triangle shot everyone on the beach with this flood of abject terror. They were utterly beside themselves in a panic attack. They ran to their house, and the 5 or 6 of them, and this is for me one of the most interesting parts of the interview, was the Rorschach blot fashion in which these set of experiences, that sequence, how each individual responded to those events. Some of them literally expressly saying, I never want to speak of this again. Don't ever bring any of this up again. Others of them being completely obsessed and unable to speak about anything else. Confusion, you know, the revelation of having not one but 2 events adjacent in such a tight timeline. And then the bizarre fact, I mean, they interestingly, I believe they came to some kind of consensus that they felt the initial objects or entities were truly non-human. And they also all felt clear that the triangle was human, that was a human controlled technology, right, and that it was in response, and that it had the capacity to know when these non-human objects or entities were arriving, and then it also was successful in dispersing them. So the worst part of Jennifer's story, I felt like, was that what happened weeks after this. She woke up paralyzed in her apartment as human beings were ransacking her place. And she was able to open her eyes and see and look around the room, but her body was incapacitated and frozen. And they just completely trashed her apartment. They also spoke, I can't remember what it was they said to her, but before they released her from the paralysis, they said something to her. And then she lost the use of one of her limbs, almost like one of her arms was non-functional for a long, long time. And I mean, the degree of trauma in her life from these events was singular and almost ineffable. To this day, even in the episode when she shares these things, there's this gravity and regard for how this can go south, you know. And granted, I would also say the caveat is, like, I don't think it went south because of the non-human entities, although I do feel like there are negative non-human entities and experiencers, but this seemed to be really, was the human factor that cast the pall, so to speak.
Yeah, okay, amazing story. A couple of points, I suppose. Like, the one that fascinates me is the implication that a human technology can infiltrate via consciousness, it would seem, if that's the case, can pick up on an initiation of contact and disperse the crowd, essentially. And that's, if that's true, I mean, that's really quite a terrifying concept. And I think, you know, you did say, obviously, they approached it with a...
Oh, you froze for a second there, Jay. I'm sure you'll be back.
There could be some level of the intention that they were setting. Because I do, you know, personally, I do personally feel that this is more about your own setting, your own, you know, mindset at the time, what you're trying to get out of it. And, you know, he's a controversial character, and to be honest, you know, with good reason, Stephen Greer, but he does a very specific set, and I don't do his protocols. I've never done his protocols, but I've had people who are in positions of intelligence who have said to me, his protocols are specific and they are like a signal instead of broadcasting on all frequencies. And so if you're broadcasting on all frequencies, you cannot expect to not be picked up by things that you don't either want or know about or had any intention of picking up on. If you are going to create a very specific channel that absolutely in every way solidifies your intention, then you're more likely to get a very specific response. And I guess that can make sense. And like I said, I've never done his protocols, but if you look at what Stephen Greer's protocols are, they are completely embedded in ritualistic pattern. And that is very important for human psychological behavior. When we get in groups and we do ritual, we get very involved into a point of emotional, you know, it builds within us in a very profound way. And so I think that what he's done is he's, you know, tried to create a very specific and intense form of creating that contact that allows for a narrower bandwidth of whatever frequency we're using here. And perhaps if you're just going out there, and I, you know, I acknowledge that I don't, I'm not very specific with my protocols, and perhaps there is a risk of me running the same sort of event as this person has, you know, described. But I would say that, yeah, if you're going out with just like a more generalistic idea and you're not really grounding it in something specific, you're kind of broadcasting all frequencies out. And, you know, I've never heard of, well, I've heard of obviously things like MyLab and human intervention, but the idea that they can somehow pick up on the most exquisite form of essentially signals intelligence, which is consciousness transmitting through, you know, the ether and being intercepted by some form of, you know, group, that's terrifying. And if that's true, it's terrifying. So you know, I acknowledge that because I'm in no denial whatsoever. I would never say CE5 is the way to go in contacting and, you know, it's all peaceful and you've got nothing to worry about. That's not my deal with this. I think that there are real risks, but at the same time, I think that it's a profound implication that there does seem to be some sort of response through consciousness that should be looked into. It should be studied academically, you know.
One of the things about that story as well, which Stuart didn't mention there, was that one of the members of the party, it was a guy who had mentioned something about a negative response or the reptilians. I think specifically, am I right in saying that, Stuart? If I listen back.
Thank you for bringing that up thank you for mentioning that. You know, because it's a little bit of a blur as content creator precise recall. So all I would say is go to the episode, and Jennifer does share in great detail, and I think you may be right about that. It may have been that there was one of the members of the group that felt maybe it wasn't human and it was reptilian. I can't recall
well, it was
that detail.
Yeah, I think it was before the triangle arrived. They basically had been talking about or mentioning a reptilian or something.
Okay, you're right.
At that point, the triangle appeared and dispersed because, similar to Jay's orb experience, Jennifer described these as being almost playful. She used the same words as well. It was like they danced in the sky. And then once this reptilian element had been added in through consciousness thought, then the triangle sort of appeared. So Jay, what you're saying might have a lot of validity there, you know?
And I think I may be conflating. I do recall that the event in her apartment where she was paralyzed, those were people. Those were human beings. And so I may be conflating some of that, but I know she's clear about it in the episode. So anyone who wants to tease those details can just go there.
I'm definitely going to listen to that, Stuart.
That's phenomenal.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you, Marty. Rick has been patiently waiting for his question for roughly half a century. So thank you, Rick, for your patience. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's going to dovetail, I didn't intend to, what we just talked about, but vibrational energies. I know that listening to Richard and CE5, they talk about lowering your vibrational energy to somewhere around 10, and that's when these sort of communication events can happen in remote viewing and so forth. What I've noticed, and I would put this question out to actually everyone in the group, especially Jay, that when you go into a depressive episode, your vibrational state lowers. Just, you know, we look at it as something that's happening in terms of an illness, but is it really, or is it happening because you're receptive to communications at that level? So I'm going to operate off of that premise, because that's what I believe, and as well as other state mental states. So my question to Jay would be, when you are entering these depressive states, is this when you're encounter happened, or did it happen just briefly after? And the reason I ask that is because I believe that when these states happen to people, their body's being prepped for communication on some level through lowering their vibrational energy. So did you find that? Did you find a correlation between that or anyone on this line right now between having a depressive state or feeling that your energy was lower, much lower, and then having communication or contact?
So if I'll jump in first, Rick, and just say thank you for that question, by the way. So in regards to like specifically contact, I would say no. I had like the last time I had what I would kind of classify as a depression was when I was in my early 20s, and then my friend showed me Unacknowledged. And I suppose, you know, if I think about it, it was only really a few months after that happened. So I suppose with the last time I had a quote unquote depression, it actually then led to me having my first contact. And I do actually attribute that depression, because the thing is, you know, I'm a young person. I haven't got a whole lot of life experience, obviously. And I don't want to be coming off like some sage wise person, because it's like, oh, come on, man, you know. But I've just found that through my own personal experiences, the more I've reflected on depressive moments in my life, they're actually transformative moments. They're turbulent, they're shifting. It's because you're not getting your ass in gear, or something's not happening. You know, you need to kick up the butt in some way. And I've noticed that more often, that if I've lulled into a depressive state, I tend to come out of that with a grander insight into why that happened. And that type of thing usually doesn't lead to a depression again. And the next time, it's just something else that I need to learn and move on with. And so, you know, obviously people have different experiences, and there are people that I, you know, I'm fortunate enough to not suffer from depression in terms of chronic depression. So I don't want to speak, you know, as an authority towards depression, because it's a serious illness. Well, it's not, you know, we say illness, but you know what I'm trying to say here, because it's a serious situation that should be looked at. But I think a lot of it has to do with your own personal opinions of yourself and your own personal growth. And if you're inhibiting your own growth, if you're lying down every day in bed and you're sitting around and you're not doing much, and you're not challenging yourself, and you're not growing as an individual, I think that you fall into these depressive states because you're depressed. You know, you need to open up again, and life tries to push you into doing that, I think. And it can be a tough teacher, it can be tough love, you know, and it can be really hard scenarios and situations, and, you know, exchanges with friends or family members that you regret, or anything like that. But I think that the more that you look at life as a series of lessons and unfolding of your own journey, I think the easier it is to see the harder situations as learning curves, you know?
Yeah, I would just dovetail on that and say that, you know, when we are feeling that way and we're feeling down and our vibrational energy goes down, it's sort of like opening up to the universe to speak to you.
Yeah.
And I really think there's a connection somewhere in there. I don't think it's as simple as I think it's your body, your consciousness saying, hey, I need help out there. So I thank you for answering that. It's really helpful. Thank you
for asking that, Bruce. Thank you very much.
Alistair, actually. And then we've got a few people after that.
Hi, Jay. Sorry, guys. I'm really not at my best at the moment. Things going on, but you don't need to know better. Okay. Couple of things that have just been said there. Paul and Michael were talking about, you know, things that can manipulate the fear factor, infrasound. I've had patients who were in the first Gulf War, were subject to that. And I'm not saying different thing in the US, because they recognize Gulf War syndrome there as being a condition. Not in the UK. The prolonged exposure to low frequency sounds as directed, as a crowd control weapon, can certainly cause fear. So when people are talking about the appearance of an object and then fear being the kind of the sum total of the object, then yeah, I reckon that's man-made. Or not, depending on what. And the other thing I was going to just, a lot of things that Jay said about his first experiences were interesting to me, just kind of professionally. And I don't want to go into any of that at all at the moment. If he ever wanted to talk to me about it, there's a lot of things which tick a lot of boxes there, which are quite interesting for me. Not because I'm going to say I think he's got a mental illness. I don't think that for a second, because it confirms with a type, it confirms a model of something, which is interesting, but I'm not going to go into that. The other thing that I was going to just say was interesting was the playful. When people talk about playful nature of, I mean, orbs, yeah, all the time. See them all the time. Jay, if you ever want to see some orbs, you ever want to see some stuff going on, come up to East Yorkshire, North Yorkshire, man. See as many as you want and some stuff as well. But all of those things, when people talk about things being playful and initially presenting as being playful and non-threatening and, oh, look, aren't they? Does anybody not get triggered by thinking that that's very much like the initial manifestation of the poltergeist phenomena or a trickster phenomena?
Because
it's very much like that to me. I'll shut up now, Jay.
No, it's a really good point, Alistair. I mean, it could almost be like, I forgot the name of the fish, but the one that's got the light on the end of its head.
Anglerfish.
Yeah, anglerfish, you know, dangling a nice pretty light in front of you, little human. Come on, dance towards the light. And so it could be that. One thing, actually, I really wanted to bring up just in regards to the controlling of fear, because this is something that I put onto my Twitter because I discovered it. I think a Patreon of mine was like, you need to have a look at this if you haven't. And it's from the Ministry of Defense. And it's on my Twitter, a few posts down if you want to check it out. And it's a document that's called Strategic Trends Program, Global Strategic Trends out to 2045. And in that, I'll just read a very small quote from it.
I think I've seen it, Jay, but go on for everybody else. Yeah,
for everyone else going. There's a page that's called Identity and the Role of the State. And it's got a lovely, image of a modeled human face of a barcode stamped onto it.
Yeah.
And right at the end of this page, it says, a range of technological enhancements have the potential to transform human identity by improving sensory perception, physical performance, and perhaps even giving us the ability to control fear and other emotional states. So, you know, it's just kind of like another nod to the fact that emotional cognitive control is not only probably actionable, but it's been looked at for a long time.
Yeah, we've been doing that a while, Jay. We've been doing that a while. I mean, I think MK Ultra did that. Everybody knows that, don't they? But just on a local level, you know, you can. I identify this because that's what I do. I identify people, you know, living near low frequency sources. I mean, you know, I've got a meter, I track them as being more likely to suffer from depression and anxiety. And that's a fact, you know, it happens. It happens. And, you know, you can medicate it all you like if you want to play the game with Pfizer, but it won't work. It won't help them. That's just one thing. More and more mood depression and the way that we all react to each other is a social problem born of control rather than control making the, you know, being in my opinion anyway. But anyway, thank you.
I agree. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Marty, you had a follow-up question?
I did. This is probably going to sound a bit crazy, but it was a thought I had. I watched the Extraordinary, the Seating documentary last week and the previous week. I actually watched it twice. And Geraldine Orozco, I think her name is, she mentioned about the hybridization program and how the consciousness or vibration level of the DNA that is being introduced to these fetuses is of a lower vibrational rate. So therefore bringing the level of consciousness down to this reptilian level of thought process. And I'm just wondering, is it possible that the hybridization program is not specifically just for that reason, but ties that in with whatever other nefarious reason there is for, you know, hybridizing humanity, that they want to bring the consciousness level lower so that we don't become beyond what we are by using our consciousness to traverse the universe and connect to a higher being? You know, if you had a group who basically wanted to infiltrate, we've talked about, you know, invading the planet and, you know, these reptilians shape-shifting into people who run governments and things like that. Is this another program potentially used to dilute the consciousness of humanity and bring us to a lower level to keep us here constantly rather than have us move somewhere else? And I'm just interested in people's thoughts. It just occurred to me when we were chatting about fear earlier.
I mean, it very well could be. I mean, you know, for me, it would all just be speculation. You don't know. I don't know enough about, you know, hybridization programs. And I certainly don't feel like I've been victim to anything like that. So for me, it'd be just pure speculation. And maybe someone else has got a more informed opinion or feels like they've got a more informed opinion.
Jerry, did you have something that you wanted to follow up with that about?
Yeah, I was out for an hour because I had to go to another meeting. So I apologize if this was already covered. But I often think that when people talk about hybridization, that it's in a very negative way. But then some people talk about our species possibly having been tweaked about 40,000 years ago to become more sentient and more conscious. And I'm just wondering if that possibility has been discussed here too. In other words, it may not be to lower our consciousness, it may be to raise it.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I think it was just because of Geraldine's specific comment in that documentary about the hybridization program that, you know, whenever humans are either having sex with these other beings or being artificially inseminated, that she mentions that the consciousness vibration level is lower for a reptilian being, because obviously the more positive you are, the higher your vibrational level, or so we're led to believe. So that was the only reason I brought that up. I personally don't have any evidence either way to say yes, it's positive or yes, it's negative. You know, it was just a random comment basically on that, but it's interesting all the same.
I just want to jump in and say, you know, like, I think, because we have... I'm a complete layman, so I'm not claiming to, like, you know, be schooling anyone here, because I have no idea what I'm really talking about. But when it comes to like vibration and like low vibration or high vibration, I mean, you know, your brain waves, they operate in all sorts of different frequencies. And, you know, the more meditative states of consciousness actually do seem to exist on things like theta, which is a very low and very, you know, like kind of slow pulsating rhythmic bassy frequency. And obviously there are much higher frequencies and they all seem to have different benefits. And so I kind of feel like we should maybe just be careful with saying like low vibration means bad, negative, because like they might be doing something to the consciousness, but they might not necessarily just be like lowering it, because there does seem to be benefits to what we see as lower frequencies of brain activity. And so I don't know. I mean, just from my perspective, when it comes to the consciousness aspect, I think that there's a whole lot of possibility for there to be something manipulating us. And it could be through genetics and DNA and through abductions. But yeah, I just wanted to make the point that just so there's no confusion, and I could be maybe a little bit wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure I'm right that, you know, low vibration doesn't necessarily mean negative. You know, that's all I wanted to kind of put forward there.
I agree with the brain pattern. I think it was the vibration of the specific energy in the atoms that when it slows generally, I think that's where the negative connotation comes from.
Was it the seeding?
Yeah, the seeding, yeah.
Yeah, I'll watch it.
Yeah, thank you, Marty, and thanks, Jerry. Just to get a few more people in here, and then we can circle back if we have time. The wonderful Professor Jay Paul has a question.
Thank you. Good. Thank you much, Jay and Jay. This has been quite enlightening. I didn't realize the depth of your experience, which correlates similar to the balls of light I've seen in Wiltshire at Stonehenge and Avebury in wow. England over 15 years. So they're very comparable. So that's very reassuring. I think you're definitely right about the low vibration, that it's intensity and it's the correlation of consciousness with the unconscious, because all of this is coming up out of the unconscious. And then what is that bridge? What is the soul, the psyche? What is that relationship between where we are at in our conscious frame, or what state our brain is in, the vibration, and how we are receptive? I really appreciate your sense of reverence towards this. And I think maybe the experience that Stuart was saying, there was kind of a lack of reverence. I think there's something very sacred and special about this. I'm what a wonderful linkage in terms of conversation with God and but what did he say to you? And so it's quite a nice way to come into this, but I really, really appreciate it. I'm very curious too about your dreams, because that's a whole realm where in terms of telepathy and the way that they communicate through imagery. And so at a later point, I'd like to follow up. I've done quite a bit of work over the last 50 years on dream work. And it turns out that my ancestral home really is right out at Omaha Beach, where in terms of June 4th, 1944, you know, so that's a whole other story, but I'm grateful for your energy, your perception, and I think there's been some sense that you've been called to do this, not that we're looking for a messiah or anything, there's enough messiahs.
No, we don't need them.
But it's, you know, it's like, this happens one, you know, one at a time. It's a very individual thing, but what really interests me is now, how can we move this to a cultural or to a civilizational level? Because it is our civilization. It's the Western, Eastern, it's planetary civilization making contact, and not only contact, closure here. What now, how do we continue the conversation in a civil manner that we can communicate and bring human species into this galactic brother and sisterhood? That's, you know, what is the cultural context, you know, and I think you're doing that.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that profoundly. And I think for me, because I've struggled with that as well. Obviously, I started making videos talking in a forest, very deep in a forest alone to the camera, so no one could hear me as I was talking about my ideas around consciousness and contact for the first time on my YouTube channel, you know, months and months and months ago when I first started making videos. And you know, it's something that is continually on my mind, is how do we progress this certain facet, because I believe that the consciousness aspect of this is a keystone to a lot of different other facets of this phenomenon. And you know, I suppose when it comes to bringing it forward, I feel like the engagement of the academic community is really needed. I think that in order for people to really integrate this into their lives, it needs to be able to be articulated and put through certain channels that we already understand. And we listen to the academic communities and we listen to the scientific community. And there are already so many brilliant minds within these communities that understand this, but they're stonewalled. A lot of them are stonewalled. A lot of them are pushed against the wall for having these what are called woo-woo ideas, or, you know, ideas that surround the concept of the soul or the spirit. And I think that that's such a profound error in human thinking, because I feel like you've literally taken half of what this whole thing is about and you've just discarded it and you've thrown it away and you've gone, we don't need to pay attention to that. All we need to do is pay attention to the bricks and the mortar and the physical stuff. And I just, you know, I just do not believe that the physical realm is the ultimate fundamental representation of reality. I just don't. I think that this is some mysterious otherworldly experience that we're going through that is temporary, and that we are more than just this experience. And so I think that, to get back to your original question, I personally feel that, you know, because I feel the pressure of this. If people talk to me and they, you know, they're more intelligent, they have a more scientific background, because I'm, you know, as much as I'd like to think, you know, I can talk and I can articulate myself quite well, I can't argue on a scientific podium about these things. I don't have that background or that knowledge. I can't use the right verbiage. I don't know how to represent myself. So yeah, for me, I'm trying my best to learn a way of describing this that an academic and someone who takes themselves very seriously and their role in academia and learning seriously, that they can entertain this and actually take it on board and see some merit in it. And so I think that, you know, much more intelligent people than me are required to bring that message forward. But I'd like to think in some way, in some small way, you know, I'm helping people understand that this is worth looking at, you know?
Well, in a big way, I think you're really helping. I'm John Mack, for example, he was a pioneer in that whole area. There, his whole story. Edgar Mitchell is another one. Also, I'm reading the work by Paul von Ward, okay. God, Genes, and Consciousness, which is a great source. He's since passed away, but there's a really good, it puts it in a great context. But no, I think you're helping it greatly by simply stating the truth. I mean, it's a real, real reality that you've experienced. So thank you very, very much. And I look forward, I'm going to listen, go look at your website or your YouTube and watch some of those, and I'll be in touch. So thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for inviting me. This has
also
been wonderful.
If you would like to, because I'd love to hear about your orb experience. So if you would like to get in contact with me, my email is projectunitycontact. So just projectunitycontact at gmail.com. Okay. So at gmail.com. So if any of you want to message me about your own experiences, Kristen Blackburn's just put it into the chat as well, Project Unity Contact. So, because I'd love for you to get in contact with me. I'd love to hear about your experience with orbs.
Yeah, it was very similar in terms of the bursts of light and that. And then what was interesting is the following day, there was this huge crop circle at Etchelhampton, right outside Devizes. The place is called Etchelhampton, but I refer to it as E.T. Chill Hampton.
That's amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul. We've got two more people on tap right now, and then we might have to cut it off so that Jay can feed himself shortly. With regard to Jay, and we can continue the conversation after Jay leaves the call. Justin, and then Alistair, please.
Hey, what's going on? I just to start off that Black Futurist, we should try to get Billy Carson, aka Forbidden Knowledge, man. He's into Egypt consciousness, UFOs, is super interesting cat. But I got like a little two-parter from the earlier in the conversation about past lives. Now, people like Linda Moulton Howe and others talk about where the machinery of our universe is. We can't escape this reincarnation process. Like, no matter what, we're living and dying and coming back here to planet Earth. And my sons, this is where it gets a little wild. They found some guy on YouTube and they did a past life regression. And my son, my little son, he's 14 years old. He goes in, does this thing, regresses back, says, "Dad, I was in a lumberjack. I had a big beard. I seen this woman who was my wife, did this whole thing, seen himself in a bed surrounded by what he felt as his family. He felt this true love. And he said, all of a sudden, I guess I died. This light, like bright light, like was me that shot out of my, like my body, my chest, my mouth just shot out. And he said, like some entity, something grabbed his hand and he was traveling through space, like through outer space. And I'm asking, I'm like, did you see Jupiter? Did you see Saturn? Did you see planets? He goes, no, I don't know how to, he didn't really know how to articulate it. He just said he was journeying through space. Now, I don't think he was journeying to like the mystical heaven. I think maybe he was journeying to be possibly reincarnated on another planet somewhere else. And that was just pretty weird to me. And I just wanted to see what your opinion was on maybe getting out of this, breaking out of the machine to be reincarnated here on Earth and possibly being reincarnated on a different planet.
Well, I mean, obviously this is just my belief and it might change over time. I don't know. But right now, I kind of have like the idea that maybe at least some aspects of life, one of the purposes, you know, for life is to self-realize and to understand what you are. And, you know, if that is actually in some way the universe, you know, you're essentially all of this experiencing itself as a very focalized point, which is this human form called Jay, you know, that is like an actor, like picking up a puppet. If that is the case, then perhaps it's required in life to realize that, and then you can make conscious choices of where you go beyond that. If you leave this life, and this is just a speculation, if you leave this life without any sort of afterthought and any sort of development of who you are and any sort of realization, maybe you just kind of get recycled back in and put back into planet Earth, or I don't know, but perhaps there is a level of self-realization needed to move up another level of reincarnation, or, you know, it's just my opinion in regards to that, but it's a good question. And that's an amazing experience. You say your son was 14 years old when he had that. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, my 16-year-old did it too, but he just said he was in a city like in the 40s or something, and he was shot in like an alleyway. But I don't know, some YouTube video, some guy, they sat, put their headphones in, did like a 30-minute regression, and we're a little open-minded over here, man. I tell them, don't be scared, you know, explore this life. It's a short one, I believe.
Absolutely. No, thank you for that.
Thank you so much, Justin. Alistair, and that might be it for at least in terms of questions for Jay.
Well, I'm gonna just kind of make it personal, Jay, if that's all right. I just wanted to share something with you guys, and certainly when Jay was on. Okay, so there's a lot of you guys there will know, for me personally, that about 2 years ago last week, I lost my son because of medical negligence, and that's something that's ongoing. My ex-wife and I are big friends. She lives across the road actually now, and we still have a lot to do with it. Anyway, just to kind of try and be succinct as possible about this, when she's here, she goes to his grave every day, okay? She goes to his grave every day. And since she's come back, I've noticed that because I've got quite a lot of equipment, you know, I've got quite a lot of stuff because I do quite a lot of my own investigation about things that I'm told about, no fear. I've been noticing that the alarms on my infrasound detectors have been going off when she's been in the house. So tonight when she went home, when she came across to see me on the way home tonight, and we were just talking and that, and I said, just wait a minute. I mean, and she, if either of us is going to be having an experience, it's me, because that's what's happened before. She's not maybe quite as sensitive, or maybe she is. And I just, let me just do this. And I've got an EMF, quite a good quality EMF detector. And I ran it over her, and it went off the scale.
Wow.
Absolutely off the scale. You know, Jake, can you see it? It's one of those ones.
It went
red and stuck just around her, I guess, if I'm going to mix, because I'm a bit like you, man. I mix the reality with the esoteric, with the traditional, with everything else, and try and make sense of it. If you're going to say around her heart chakra, then that's what it would be. And it was going, and it was coming back, and I'm putting it there. I'm going, treasure, shit, man, what is going on there? nothing anywhere else.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Actually, you know what? I'll trade a personal story, and I'm sorry, obviously, for your loss with your son, Alistair.
No, it's okay, man. It's okay.
But I'll trade a personal story. It's not about me, but it's about my mom, but I'm sure my mom won't mind me telling it. It happened recently as well, because this didn't happen, but the situation happened recently. But a number of years ago, her sister passed away, my auntie. Mm-hmm. I have early memories of her. She was a lovely woman, but she was wheelbound. She had a muscle degenerative issue, and she was wheelbound. So that was obviously, you know, a devastating blow for my mum. And she went through all sorts of things trying to find answers. And she did actually go to a medium. And I tell you, I will trust a medium I'll trust any psychic who lives on a council estate, who doesn't ask anyone for anything, who just offers it as a freedom of service. I will trust the person. And, she went to this psychic, and they actually genuinely did give her some pretty convincing information. But that's not what I wanted to touch on. What my mum recently said to me was that, I live in Nottingham. My mum lives in North Wales. God bless her. She's a fair amount of miles away from me. And I'm hoping I can see her for Christmas. But she was playing with my sister's son, little baby boy. Mm-hmm. And she had shown Rory, our baby Rory, she had shown him images of Auntie Jo. That was my auntie. And she would say, oh, this is Auntie Jo. She'd always point and say, this is Auntie Jo. And the other day when she was in the room with Rory, there was this is a room with no photos of my auntie in it.
Mm-hmm.
Rory suddenly goes like this and points at the corner of the room, and this big smile pops up on his face, and he goes, Auntie Jo, Auntie Jo. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that there is a connection. People stay with you. And, you know, so thank you for sharing that story. And I just wanted to echo it.
It's very personal. And I just don't want to make of it, because as anybody else will tell you here, Jay, I am what you call, an inquisitive skeptic. I do a lot of stuff, but I don't necessarily believe it. I need to know what I need to know, you know, professionally as well. So, yeah. But I just thought I'd share that with you guys. Sorry about that.
Sorry, thank you.
All right.
Well, I think we can keep the conversation going, but it's getting late for Jay, and we are so happy to have you here. It's amazing. For anybody I see over on the Project Unity Patreon page and from our chat that Jay's picked up three new patrons over on Project Unity. That's Kirsten, Marty, and Stuart Davis, I believe. And you're in. You know, I'm gonna enjoy being in the credits with you at the end of Jay's wonderful videos. It's always, I forget about that, and then it's always a surprise when it comes up. I love that. For anybody else, you know, there's a private discussion board through Discord. That's a perk with a $4 per month Patreon.
It's off to you guys.
and we strongly, Steph here, at least I and Kristen for sure, and I'm sure Sherry as well, and Bob as well, he put that in the chat. We all highly encourage you, if you enjoy Jay's work, if you enjoy the time that Jay spent with us today, please think about helping to support his work through Patreon in the future, if not today. Thank you so much, Jay, for
thank your time. Thank you so much. This has been great. And like we said, the largest turnout for a meetup yet. So you're very popular.
Let me just say thank you. And also thank you so much for the ones of you that have become Patreons. That means so much to me. And, you know, I want to just premise, it's never about money, but I'm not a rich guy, and it really does help. And, you know, it's just a really lovely thing to know that people are willing to support me at that level. So I really appreciate it. And I don't want to leave, but I need to eat. I'm really hungry. Yes. All I've drunk is caffeine, and I feel like I'm about to have like some sort of crazy attack. So but I'm so appreciative of you guys inviting me, and I'm happy to come back and do this again, because it was lovely. This has been absolutely awesome talking to all of you.